comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Good night to all of you, dear listeners of Iran Radio. You are tuned in Iran Radio broadcasting from Tehran. Glad you could join us. I'm your host for the next hour. Here are some interesting facts about Islam. Let's listen. Islam is the world's second largest religion, and it is a monotheistic faith with about 1.8 billion followers worldwide, originating in Mecca during the life of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of Allah upon him and his progeny. Islam means submission to the will of Allah, and its followers are called Muslims. Muslims believe in one God, Allah, who is the creator of all things and has no partners or equals. The Quran is the holy book of Islam, believed to be the literal word of Allah revealed to Prophet Muhammad, blessings of Allah upon him and his progeny. Muslims adhere to the five pillars of Islam: Shahada, or declaration of faith; Salah, or prayer; Zakat, or charity; Saum, or fasting during Ramadan; and Hajj, or pilgrimage to Mecca. The Islamic year is 11 days shorter than the year used in the Western world. This is because the Western year is based on the orbit of the Earth around the Sun instead of on the faces of the Moon. And we'll listen to continuation of Iran Radio. We start off this hour's programs with Iran Today. The program focuses on advancements in science and technology in the Islamic Republic of Iran and highlights the latest business and economic developments in the country. And our final program this hour is Let's Recite the Quran. The program teaches eloquent recitation of the Holy Quran at level 2. Stay with us for the next hour.
The 8-year defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
On November 20th, inside a packed IAEA Board of Governors meeting room in Vienna, a familiar drama played out once again. With 19 votes in favor, the European Troika, joined by Washington, pushed through yet another resolution demanding that Iran fully and immediately expand cooperation with nuclear inspectors. The text calls on Tehran to hand over precise data about its 60% enriched uranium stockpiles and to open the gates of its nuclear facilities to agency personnel, among many other demands. But Tehran saw this coming. Iranian diplomats had warned that any new hostile measures would reflect Western political ambitions, not nuclear facts. And they point to what they call the real trigger for today's crisis, The June attacks on Iran's safeguarded nuclear facilities carried out by the United States and the Israeli regime. Once again, Iran's peaceful nuclear program has become a convenient stage for political theater, pressure that has never succeeded in stopping Iran from pursuing its legitimate nuclear rights. It's a game that seems to never end. That's how Iran frames the IAEA's approach, a process designed to keep Tehran in a permanent limbo until it yields to Western demands. Russia, China, and Niger voted against the resolution. 12 other countries abstained. The split vote underscored a truth everyone in the room already knew. The board is deeply polarized and nowhere close to consensus. In a joint statement, 8 countries, that is Belarus, China, Cuba, Iran, Nicaragua, Russia, Venezuela, and Zimbabwe, condemned the U.S. and Israeli attacks on Iranian nuclear facilities and denounced the push for a new resolution. They urge member states to resist politicizing Iran's nuclear file and reject the draft entirely. While the resolution ultimately passed, the combined 12 abstentions and 3 no votes revealed what Iran called a gap between reality and truth inside the agency. Dr. Afife Obedi, a prominent journalist and foreign policy researcher, provided us with her analysis of the vote's composition.
در ادامه این روند به نظر میرسه که قطعنامه هم که از طرف شورای حکام
It appears that the resolution adopted by the Board of Governors with a very narrow and fragile margin, as you know it received 19 votes in favor and the combined number of votes against and abstentions was almost the same, can once again be described as a political move designed to serve the maximum pressure campaign pursued by the West and the Zionist regime against Iran.
Tehran went further, describing the resolution as an unconstructive attempt by the European Troika and the U.S. to compensate for their failed snapback attempt at the UN. Senior political analyst Dr. Hossein Kanani Moghaddam offered further insight into the resolution.
The core content of this resolution is to impose a 3-month deadline, after which the case would be referred to the UN Security Council, enabling the Council to pass a resolution against Iran and take action. If we think of this resolution as a nuclear reactor, the core of that reactor, in terms of impact, is that it confirms the snapback mechanism, reinstates the 6 previous resolutions, and once again alleges Iran's lack of cooperation. It does not call for the suspension of Iran's nuclear activities, but for their complete shutdown. It also reinforces the requirement for Iran to return to the safeguards agreement it accepted and signed in 2003, an agreement that is binding and legally enforceable because it clearly outlines Iran's obligations. This resolution effectively revives Iran's file, which was close to being removed from the Board of Governors' agenda. It states that in every upcoming board session, Iran's nuclear case must remain one of the items on the agenda.
The irony, Iran notes, is that the IAEA itself has acknowledged the very real consequences of the June attacks. Normal safeguards were disrupted, inspectors were withdrawn, and Iran, saying it acted in good faith, still allowed verification activities to resume at facilities unaffected by the attacks. Grossi's own report recognized Iran's domestic legal requirements and affirmed the agency's commitment to respecting Iranian security concerns. Yet the sponsors of the resolution barely mentioned any of this. During special board sessions, they avoided reference to the attacks entirely, even though the IAEA's official report documents them. The EU, speaking for its 27 members, stressed that diplomacy is the only viable path forward. With six UN resolutions reinstated, the EU said all members are now obligated to require Iran to suspend all enrichment, reprocessing, and heavy water activities. The Union insisted Iran had sidestepped its JCPOA commitments for 6 years and that its enriched uranium stockpile has ballooned to nearly 50 times the JCPOA limit. Mr. Hassan Beheshtipour, a senior political analyst, placed the recent resolution against Iran in context.
These resolutions are essentially a continuation of the nuclear case-building process against Iran. Since August 2002, Iran's peaceful nuclear activities were turned into an international issue, and from that point onward, it has been called Iran's nuclear file, while in reality, it's a manufactured file. This case was created for Iran, and one of the main platforms where this case building happens is the IAEA and its Board of Governors. The importance of this resolution is not simply that another resolution has been issued and Iran will not implement it, so it does not matter. It does matter because they are creating documentation against us. When a country is discussed and voted on in a 35-member body and an 8-paragraph text is issued as a ruling, that text becomes another sheet added to the previous ones. Iran's file at the Board of Governors includes over 120 Director General reports issued every 3 months and more than 40 resolutions. The resolution adopted in this recent round is effectively the 10th in the latest phase. From an international standpoint, the problem is that each new resolution becomes another documented claim layered onto the previous ones, strengthening their narrative. The other key issue is that this gives Germany, the UK, France, and behind the scenes the US and Israel a pretext. They can now cite these resolutions as justification for taking new actions or imposing additional measures against Iran.
According to EU claims, Iran holds more than 440 kilograms of 60% enriched uranium and over 10 significant quantities of highly enriched material. Some of this, they allege, has been unaccounted for over 5 months. With those accusations on the table, the Troika defended their decision to activate snapback, reviving six old UN Security Council resolutions and using them as a legal basis for the new joint resolution with Washington. What is the significance of the recent anti-Iranian resolution adopted by the IAEA, and what would be the possible repercussions?
One of the outcomes of this resolution is exactly the document building process I mentioned earlier. They are trying to create legitimacy for actions that are in fact illegitimate. When a nuclear site is operating under IAEA supervision, like Fordow, Natanz, or Isfahan, the agency issues detailed reports on them every 3 months. These facilities are inspected, transparent, internationally recognized, and engage in peaceful activity. So when such sites are attacked, that attack is an illegal act under international law because it targets facilities under IAEA oversight that are in full compliance with the NPT. Yet they attempt to justify this unlawful behavior through the very resolutions issued against Iran. Even before the Zionist regime's attack on Iran, a resolution had already been passed, and these resolutions are then used as political cover. In other words, they are manufacturing legitimacy. Under international law, as long as a site is under IAEA supervision and complying with the NPT, no state has the right to attack it. But through these resolutions, they try to turn the situation into a political asset, using it to increase pressure on Iran, push for further isolation, discourage other countries from engaging with Iran, and build negative media narratives. They create a wide range of storylines around these issues. Yet, when you look closely, there is not a single piece of evidence, according to the agency itself, that Iran is pursuing nuclear weapons.
On safeguards, the Europeans argued Iran has delayed verification of enriched materials and failed to implement several NPT obligations. They also insisted that Tehran submit a special report on the damaged facilities, grant access to key sites, and resolve what they call unresolved issues. Unable to meet their own JCPOA commitments, the Europeans now accuse Iran of failing to restore trust and transparency, particularly regarding enriched uranium stockpiles. Dr. Kanani Moqaddam stated that the West's hidden agenda is to overthrow the Islamic Republic.
What do you think is the real reason and motivation behind the European Troika's action? And basically, do you think there exists a hidden agenda contrary to what they state and express?
The overarching plan the West is pursuing regarding Iran is essentially a Libya-style model. The idea is to first dismantle Iran's nuclear capabilities and remove its equipment, then intensify pressure on Iran's missile program and regional policies. After that, NATO and the UK would be in a position to carry out military action with ease. And as we saw in Libya, the result of such a model is a country that becomes fragmented, loses its sovereign authority, faces a power vacuum, and is stripped of its capabilities, gaining nothing in return.
We have a lot more to cover today, but first let's take a moment to catch up on the latest headlines.
Hello everyone, welcome to the news section of this program. Here we'll go over some important news headlines. First, Iran condemns draft resolution by US, E3 at IAEA BOG. Iran's permanent representative to the International Atomic Energy Agency, Reza Najafi, censured a draft resolution proposed by the United States and three European countries at the IAEA Board of Governors, calling it a bid to impose unjustified and illegal reporting obligations on the United Nations Atomic Agency's Director General Rafael Grossi. The anti-Iranian resolution at the IAEA Board of Governors will not change Iran's status of safeguards implementation, Najafi said ahead of the upcoming BOG meeting, which took place from November 19 to 21 in Vienna. He argued that Washington and the E3 are once again trying to manipulate international mechanisms in order to impose their unreasonable and coercive positions on the Iranian nation. Forcing Grossi to base reports on expired UN Security Council resolutions is not only completely unlawful and unjustified, but will also, in practice, increase existing complexities and deal another setback to diplomacy, the Iranian diplomat added. Iran warns of countermeasures against illegal IAEA resolution. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said Tehran is considering more countermeasures against an illegal resolution adopted by the International Atomic Energy Agency regarding the country's peaceful nuclear program. Esmail Baghaei made the remarks on November 21, one day after the IAEA's 35-member Board of Governors passed the anti-Iran resolution put forward by France, the UK, Germany, and the United States. In response, Tehran announced the termination of the deal it signed in Egypt's Cairo in September to resume cooperation with the UN's nuclear watchdog. The ties had been suspended after the deadly US-Israel aggression against Iran in June. Baghaei said in an official letter to the agency, "We declared that the so-called Cairo agreement, which had been reached with Iran's goodwill and after relatively long negotiations with the agency, is now cancelled. Other measures are also under consideration." Tehran Times. MPs ponder response to IAEA's anti-Iran resolution. The National Security and Foreign Policy Committee of the Iranian Parliament categorically condemned the recently adopted anti-Iran resolution by the Board of Governors of the International Atomic Energy Agency after beginning the process to devise an appropriate response. Ebrahim Rezaei, the spokesperson for the committee, dismissed the resolution as politically motivated and illegal, highlighting the need to show a strong and deterrent reaction to the move. He made the comments following an extraordinary session of the committee attended by Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister and the Deputy Head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran. Rezaei had previously suggested that Tehran leave the NPT. This session was held in order to review the IAEA's recent resolution against the Islamic Republic of Iran, he explained. IRNA. Russia anti-Iran resolution by IAEA BOG is a serious blow to credibility of agency. Russian Foreign Ministry spokesperson Maria Zakharova said that Russia considers the anti-Iranian and provocative resolution of the International Atomic Energy Agency proposed by the Western camp a serious blow to international confidence in the IAEA safeguards and the nuclear NPT. Reacting to the vote of the IAEA Board of Governors on the draft resolution on the NPT safeguards agreement with the Islamic Republic of Iran, Zakharova said that there is no need for emergency action by the IAEA Board of Governors regarding the verification activities in Iran. The Russian Foreign Ministry spokesperson pointed out that the IAEA Secretariat had not requested any instructions from the IAEA Board of Governors. She said that Russia recognizes Iran's continued adherence to its obligations under the NPT and the Comprehensive Safeguards Agreement with the International Atomic Energy Agency, despite the U.S. and Israeli attacks on its nuclear facilities under IAEA safeguards in June. And thank you for joining us in this section. Please do stay tuned for the main narrative. For many years, Iran's peaceful nuclear program has been the target of political pressure and Western allegations. Before the JCPOA, the possible military dimensions file became the centerpiece of sanctions and threats. But when that file was formally closed in 2015, the pretext disappeared, albeit for a while. After the JCPOA was signed, Iran complied. The United States did not, walking away in 2018. Europe, meanwhile, never delivered the economic benefits it had promised. In response, Iran exercised its JCPOA-defined rights and scaled back commitments. 7 years of diplomacy followed. Iran says it approached negotiations in good faith. Western governments, however, responded with delays and ever-increasing demands.
When the Zionist regime carried out its illegal attack against Iran and its nuclear facilities, European countries not only refused to condemn it, they even expressed satisfaction. They particularly welcomed any adverse event that might occur in Iran, whether targeting nuclear sites or even affecting Iranian civilians. This clearly shows that the concerns the West claims to have about Iran are not technical at all. They are entirely political. There are numerous precedents for this. Consider the nuclear agreement. When the United States withdrew from the JCPOA, Europe, despite its explicit commitments under the deal, did not activate the snapback mechanism against the US, nor did it uphold its promised cooperation with Iran. In one of the joint meetings about a year after the US withdrawal in 2019, the Europeans made a series of commitments during the session with the JCPOA Joint Commission, yet they failed to fulfill any of them. They even pretended to introduce certain initiatives to preserve the agreement and deliver the economic benefits Iran was supposed to receive, but none of these materialized. In practice, Europe's conduct after the JCPOA and following the US withdrawal demonstrated that they were playing a complementary role to the United States. Europeans maintained a diplomatic facade of commitment, but in reality they sought to ensure that only Iran remained bound to the agreement, while Iran received none of the benefits it was promised.
On November 20th, Iran's foreign ministry condemned the new resolution as illegal and unjustifiable, imposed under pressure from Washington, London, Paris, and Berlin. Hours later, Iran's foreign minister announced that the Cairo agreement between Iran and the IAEA can no longer be implemented. Tehran notes that 5 months earlier, a biased IAEA report helped clear the way for the June attacks carried out by Israel and the United States. Even then, Iran continued cooperating.
Back in September, Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi made a new inspection agreement in Cairo, only for the European Troika and the U.S. to revive snapback once again. Supported by Russia and China, Iran rejected the process as legally invalid. From Iran's perspective, the West's decision to activate the snapback killed the Cairo agreement outright. Now, Tehran says that the U.S. must answer one basic question. If U.S. President Donald Trump claims that he destroyed Iran's nuclear facilities, then what exactly does the West want to inspect? The new resolution seeks to revive demands from long-expired UN resolutions requiring Iran to suspend enrichment. According to Iran, the board has no legal authority to resurrect terminated Security Council measures. The Troika's attempt to imply such authority exposes bad faith and disregard for IAEA procedures. To Tehran, the text reads like a manifesto of threats aimed at restricting Iran's strategic capabilities, a project championed for decades by the U.S., Europe, and Israel.
Iran has several possible courses of action. The first is a snapback against snapback approach, meaning we raise the cost of such measures to a level that Europeans reconsider exerting pressure on the Islamic Republic. Part of this relates to energy, and part of it concerns international waterways such as Bab al-Mandeb, the Persian Gulf, and the Indian Ocean. Iran has the ability to raise Europe's energy costs to a point where some governments already facing economic crises may regret entering a game designed for them by the Americans. In parts of Europe, there are still rational actors who do not wish to follow U.S. policy line by line. The second path is through diplomacy. We must continue dialogue and emphasize our right to the peaceful use of nuclear energy, a right recognized under international law and accepted by all. We're still within the framework of the NPT. We have not withdrawn, and we should maintain this course to reach a balance between pressures and resistance. The third option is reaching a point of no return, moving the nuclear program to the edge of breakout, enriching up to 90%, conducting a nuclear test, withdrawing from the NPT, and disrupting the regional order the United States seeks to impose. But entering such a path could lead to a conflict whose scope is unknown, including whether it could escalate into a global war.
Yet, Iran emphasizes a key point. Not one IAEA inspection report has ever accused Iran of blocking inspectors. Not one. Before the attacks, Iran had the highest inspection rate in the world. Nearly three-quarters of IAEA verification activities in all safeguard agreement states occurred in Iran. In 2024, the IAEA conducted 1,381 inspector days there. Among 32 countries operating without the additional protocol, Iran, with only 3% of global enrichment capacity, accounted for more than 70% of all inspections. But while Iran's transparency has been unmatched, Israel, armed with an undeclared nuclear arsenal estimated up to 400 warheads, and never a member of the NPT, operates outside any inspections. UN Resolution 487 demanded that Israel place its facilities under safeguards. It never has. The result, from Iran's perspective, the IAEA is no longer acting as a neutral arbiter. What was meant to be an impartial watchdog now appears to function as a vehicle for Western political pressure.
In short, Israel has not accepted the NPT, whereas Iran has. Israel is a member of the IAEA, but it has never signed the agency's most fundamental treaty, and because it has not signed it, it does not consider itself bound by it. So why is there no pressure on Israel? Because it's an ally of the United States, Germany, the UK, France, and other dominant powers. In today's world, international law is not what truly governs. Power does. It is power that shapes international relations. That's why Israel, backed by the US, the UK, France, Germany and others can simply refuse to join the NPT, remain a member of the IAEA, and at the same time possess more than 300 nuclear warheads. Why cannot Iran do the same? First, because they would never accept it. Iran has fundamentally challenged international order and the existing balance of power. Iran views this system as hegemonic and domineering and is in confrontation with it on various fronts, including the nuclear issue. So it's clear that they will seize on any pretext, including the nuclear file, to prevent Iran from operating outside the NPT framework, even if those activities are purely peaceful. For them, this is a convenient instrument to maintain pressure on a country that has dared to challenge the existing international system.
After 22 years of allegations and political maneuvering, the IAEA Board of Governors' latest resolution confirms that the agency is no longer an independent supervisor. It is an operational arm of Western policy, applying pressure, issuing threats, and advancing a strategy of containment. Tehran views the resolution as the final, unmistakable sign of a system no longer aligned with fairness, impartiality, or the principles of the non-proliferation regime. We asked Dr. Aberi to outline the possible scenarios that lie ahead. What do you think would be Iran's next move?
It seems the United States and Europe are once again trying to pull Iran back to the negotiating table, but for an unfair agreement, one based on their imposed conditions. One of the key conditions they insisted on in the past and continue to insist on today, despite its illegality, is stripping Iran of its right to uranium enrichment. This, in fact, is the most optimistic scenario. I personally believe there is also a more pessimistic scenario, that the West is not actually seeking oversight of Iran's nuclear program. Rather, they want additional intelligence about the facilities that were attacked and about enriched materials buried beneath them, so they can complete the sabotage of operations previously carried out against Iran's nuclear program. Even in the optimistic scenario, their aim is to shut down Iran's nuclear program and reduce it to whatever level they consider acceptable. There is also a third scenario, neither a new agreement nor a military strike, but instead an escalation of maximum pressure on Iran. To intensify this pressure, they seek a legal mechanism. The Board of Governors resolution is essentially an attempt to give legal cover to the unjust pressure they want to impose. Iran is familiar with all these scenarios and has prepared itself accordingly. Over the past two decades, and even after the Zionist regime's recent attack, Iran's primary effort has consistently been to follow a legal and legitimate path, cooperate with international institutions, and rebuild international confidence in its nuclear program, not merely the confidence of Western governments. In my view, the most likely scenario is that Iran will once again pursue a legal process to disrupt and counter this Western strategy against it.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Until next time, take care.
Thank you. Let's recite the Quran.
وَإِذَا قَرَأْتَ الْقُرْآنَ جَعَلْنَا بَيْنَكَ وَبَيْنَ الَّذِينَ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْآخِرَةِ حِجَابًا مَسْتُورًا.
القرآن نور وبيان، القرآن هدي الإيمان، القرآن مسك الختام، يا قرآن عليك سلام.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Welcome to this episode of Let's Recite the Quran. My name is Brother Muhammad, and with me in the studio we have Brother Masoom, Brother Hassan and Hussein, and we're missing Ali. Wherever you are, Brother Ali, we miss you a lot in the studio, in this episode at least. Inshallah, in this episode we will be concluding the Suratul Ma'arij. We are in the last four verses of this chapter, verses number 40, 41, 42, and 43. And 44 of this chapter, inshallah. Brother Masoom, can you please recite verses number 41 and 42 of this chapter, Surah Ma'arij?
Yes. A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. على أن نبدل خيرا منهم وما نحن بمسبوقين فذرهم يخوضوا ويلعبوا حتى يلاقوا يومهم الذي يوعدون.
يلاقوا.
Yes.
Not يلاقوا. Right. Keep in mind there is no تفخيم for لام. Right. As opposed to that, we have, for example, you did recite تفخيم well for the verse number 41. خيرا. Right. تفخيم. Tafkhim basically means heavy recitation of the tafkhim letters. What are the tafkhim letters, by the way?
Tafkhim letters.
Yeah.
Letters that should be pronounced.
Yeah, but what are those? Tell me the letter, the actual tafkhim
letters.
Like
we have qaf, we have sad, we have ra, we have ghain.
Ahsantum.
We have dad.
Yeah.
We have la, we have ta.
Mm-hmm.
And so on.
Very good. So they're not many for you to forget them.
Yes.
Let me give you the exact tafkhim letters so that kha, sad, bad, ghain, ta, qaf, and va. These are all khussa, khussa, dhaghatin, qidh. If you can memorize that, these are all the tafkhim letters.
Beautiful word.
Khussa. Dagatin qid. These are all tafkhim letters. It's a key word for you to memorize to keep to be up to date with the tafkhim letters. And also keep in mind, ra and lam are also tafkhim, right? But ra is tarqiq whenever it has a kasra itself or a kasra before it, and itself is sakin, right? And lam only in the letter of Allah, in the word of Allah. Whenever we have a fatha or dhamma before Allah, right? We recited it with tafkhim. Allah. You see fatha? Qul huwa Allah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then if it is kasra before the lam of Allah, we recite it with tarqiq. Lillahi. A flattened lam. Tarqiq means flattening the voice. Lillahi. It's always flattening the voice unless you have the tafkhim letter or the tafkhim position, right? In this case, tafkhim position, Allah. Allah is tafkhim position, it's not a tafkhim letter. But in other cases, it's tafkhim letters. Kha, sa, da, gha, ta, qa, va. All of these are tafkhim letters. In this case, we have khayra, right? Ala an nubaddila khayran, right?
Yes.
Tafkhim letters. We, instead of reciting khayran minhum, you recited khayran minhum. Why the ghunna and why the connection between this tanween and meme?
It's because of idgham.
Idgham. Ahsantum. And what does idgham say?
It says when there is noon sakin, and after that we have yarmalun letters.
Mm-hmm.
we must apply.
Exactly. So khayran, although it is tanween, in reality it was nun sakin at the end. And nun sakin followed by yarmalun letters. So which is ya, ra, meem, waw, lam, and nun. Right? Yarmalun letters. One of them is meem. So we have meem here. So this ruling of idgham is applied here. Right? Khayran minhum. And idgham can be applied either with ghunna or without ghunna. Sure. With ghunna is whenever we have non-ra and lam letters. Yamun, ya, meem, waw, and nun. In this case, it is meem. So we have to do it with ghunna. Ghunna basically means a nasal sound and a small stretch. Khayran minhum. Right? Again, before this as well, we have an idgham. An-nubaddila. It was an-nubaddila, but then we do the idgham of mithlain, the two noon next to each other, we do idgham. An-nubaddila. And this is again with ghunna, a small nasal sound and a stretch. Ahsantum.
Ala an-nubaddila khayran minhum wa ma nahnu bimasbuqin.
To replace them with better than them, and we are not to be outdone.
فَذَرْهُمْ يَخُوضُوا وَيَلْعَبُوا حَتَّى يُلَاقُوا يَوْمَهُمُ الَّذِي يُوعَدُونَ.
So leave them to converse vainly and amuse themselves until they meet their day which they are promised.
We will move on to the next verse in the interest of time, and we'll keep all the other points, inshallah, for the next verse. Verse number 43, I'll ask Brother Hassan to please take the honors of reciting it.
يَوْمَ يَخْرُجُونَ مِنَ الْأَجْدَاسِ سِرَاعًا كَأَنَّهُمْ إِلَى نُسُوبٍ يُوفِظُونَ.
أحسنتم, you've improved a lot, but then keep in mind the stretches. And I think there is a very tricky part in this verse that many of us might not be able to, or might not be focusing on. أَجْدَاثِ سِرَاعًا. Right? This is not a tajweed issue. This is a مخارج الحروف issue. Yes. مخارج الحروف basically means the execution of the sound of the letters. We have ثَ and سَ next to each other. And this is not a very common case. It's a bit difficult sometimes when we are reciting to make sure we distinguish these two letters. Ajdathi. At the end of ajdath, we have a tha. Alif ba ta tha. And tha is recited with a tongue in between your teeth, right? Ajdathi sira'an. Now, seen is a normal flat S. Sa, sa. The normal S of English. Sa. Ajdathi sira'an. Thi sira'an. Keep in mind that this does not confuse you. Again, at the beginning of the verse, يَوْمَ يَخْرُجُونَ يَخْرُجُونَ. This is, these two, خَا and رَا are تَفْخِيم letters. Heavy voice and a rounded mouth. يَخْرُجُونَ مِنَ الْأَجْدَاثِ. What ruling is applied at this, the Jim Sakin, brother Hassan? أَجْدَاثِ
قَلْقَلَ.
Qalqala, very good. Qalqala basically means that qutub jad letters, qaf, ta, ba, jim, and dal, any of these letters when they're sakin, to distinguish between the letters, we add an echoing sound to them. It was originally ajdath, we say ajdath, a small echoing sound.
يَوْمَ يَخُرُجُونَ مِنَ الْأَجْدَاثِ سِرَاعًا كَأَنَّهُمْ.
Is this correct? Or سِرَاعًا كَأَنَّهُمْ. Can you tell me the difference and tell me which one is the correct one? Brother Hassan? Let me repeat that once again.
سِرَاعًا كَأَنَّهُمْ.
Is this the correct recitation? Or
سِرَاعًا كَأَنَّهُمْ.
This one.
The first one.
The first one? Are you sure? Can you tell me the difference between the two recitation?
Yes. You made in the first recitation, you read it normally, sira'an.
Yeah, without ghunna. There was no ghunna between the tanween of sira'an and the kaf of ka'anna. But in the second one, I did give the ghunna. Why did I give the ghunna for the second one? And the second one is the correct, by the way. Because ka is one of the mouth letters.
And there is a ruling called ikhfa. Ikhfa basically means whenever we have a tanween or a nun sakin, followed by any of the mouth letters, ka is one of the mouth letters, right? If I want to name all the mouth letters, they're very simple. Let me just give you those, the list of the mouth letters quickly. Ta, tha, ja, da, tha, za, sa, sha, sa, da, ta, va, tha, qa, ka. All of these are mouth letters, right? Now keep in mind, ka is one of them. And so therefore we have a nun sakin. After that we have ka. And this means that we have to apply ikhfa. Ikhfa means silencing the sound of nun and giving it a ghunna. Ghunna means a small nasal sound with a small stretch. Originally it would have been sira'an ka'annahum. After applying ikhfa, it would become sira'an ka'annahum. Ila nusubi yufidun. Nusubi, originally it was nusubin yufidun, but because of idgham, and we did explain idgham in this episode, I think twice, I believe. Nusubi yufidun. It becomes merged, the nun at the end of the tanween of the nusub and the ya of yufidun. Right, they're merged and the ghunna sound is there.
يَوْمَ يَخْرُجُونَ مِنَ الْأَجْدَاثِ سِرَاعًا كَأَنَّهُمْ إِلَى نُصُبٍ يُوفِضُونَ.
The day they will emerge from the graves rapidly, as if they were toward an erected idol, hastening.
We will continue the other points for the last verse, and we will save the last verse for none other than Brother Hussein. The last verse of Surah Al-Ma'arij, verse number 44. Please take the honors.
خَاشِعَةً أَبْصَارُهُمْ تَرْحَقُهُمْ ذِلَّةِ ذَلِكَ الْيَوْمُ الَّذِي كَانُوا يُوعَدُونَ.
أحسنتم. Very beautiful recitation. خَاشِعَةً, it's idhar. There is no ikhfa or idgham or ghunna, anything. There's normal pronunciation. خاشعة أبصارهم. Now, أبصارهم, I'll give you one ruling and you'll give me the other. The first ruling is the ruling of تفخيم. Rounded mouth with a heavy sound. أبصارهم. صاد and را are تفخيم letters. It's not أبصارهم. أبصارهم. Right? Can you tell me the other ruling that is involved in this? أبصارهم.
قلقلة.
قلقلة. The ba is a sakin ba, and so therefore we give it an echoing sound. خاشعة أبصارهم ترهقهم ترهقهم. Again, a تفخيم letter. قا. الراء is also with تفخيم. ترهقهم. I'm sorry, not ha. ترهقهم. Right? ذلة. And there is a waqf here, and the waqf is a ja'iz waqf, meaning that you can stop or you can continue, and there is no preference for either. It's up to you. ذَلِكَ الْيَوْمُ الَّذِي كَانُوا يُوعَدُونَ.
خَاشِعَةً أَبْصَارُهُمْ تَرْهَقُهُمْ ذِلَّةِ ذَلِكَ الْيَوْمُ الَّذِي كَانُوا يُوعَدُونَ.
Their eyes humbled, humiliation will cover them. That is the day which they had been promised.
Inshallah, we'll recite the last four verses of Surah Al-Ma'arij together. A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Ala an nubaddila khayran minhum wa ma nahnu bimasbuqin.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. على أن نبدل خيرا منهم وما نحن بمسبوقين.
Keep in mind for خيرا, both خاء and راء are with تفخيم. خيرا, not خيرا. خيرا, keep the roundedness for both the خاء and راء.
فَذَرُهُمْ يَخُوضُوا وَيَلْعَبُوا حَتَّى يُلَاقُوا يَوْمَهُمُ الَّذِي يُوعَدُونَ. فذرهم يخوضوا ويلعبوا حتى يلاقوا يومهم الذي يوعدون
يوم يخرجون من الأجداث سراعا كأنهم إلى نصب يوفضون
يوم يخرجون من الأجداث سراعا كأنهم إلى نصب يوفضون
خاشعة أبصارهم ترهقهم ذلة ذلك اليوم الذي كانوا يوعدون
خاشعة أبصارهم ترهقهم ذلة ذلك اليوم الذي كانوا يوعدون
صدق الله العلي العظيم
صدق الله العلي العظيم
And that's the conclusion of this episode and also the finishing and the conclusion of Surah Al-Ma'arij, chapter number 70 of the Noble Quran. We bid you farewell with that. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. وآل محمد
Let's recite the Quran. A joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Good night to all of our listeners. You are tuned into Iran Radio, broadcasting from Tehran. Glad you could join us. I'm your host for the next hour. We'll start off this hour's programs with our news bulletin. After that, we have Minber. The program covers speeches on a host of subjects by very well-known Islamic scholars and orators, and they will be followed by Round the World with reporters. Reporters from around the globe tell us what is happening in their corner of the world. Listen to fascinating reports from distant land. And we round up this hour's programs with leaders' speech, presenting an English translation of a selection of the statements and speeches by Honorable Leader of the Islamic Revolution of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei. Stay with us for the next hour.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel has carried out fresh attacks on Gaza as it keeps violating the ceasefire agreement with Hamas. Iran's UN ambassador says unilateral coercive measures amount to crimes against humanity and violate international law. And new survey shows workplace morale has fallen among US diplomats under the Trump administration. Welcome, you've tuned into World News Live from Tehran with me, Zainab Zakaria. Thank you so much for joining us. The Israeli military continues to violate the Gaza ceasefire by carrying out strikes in the war-ravaged territory. The southern city of Khan Yunis saw new attacks, including artillery fire. Israeli naval forces also opened fire on the coast of Khan Yunis in Gaza City.